Listen up, webmasters. Do you have the domain from GoDaddy but still don't have a design to go with it? If you want a great design to go with your great website, head over to Exhaler Studios. Quality, professional graphic, and web design. Need to fix up an existing design? No problem. Exhaler can do it all. Head over to their site at exhalerstudios.com. That's exhalerstudios.com. All websites get a 15% discount using the code MCMuggle. What's up, MuggleCast listeners? If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has what you need. Get your own .com domain name for as low as $1.99. Plus, world-class hosting, fast and easy website builders, and much more. Plus, as a listener of MuggleCast, enter code RON, that's R-O-N, when you check out, and get your .com domain name for just $6.95 a year. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Her eyes are as green as a fresh pickled toad. Her hair is as dark as a blackboard. I wish she was mine. She's really divine. The hero who
conquered Andrew.
Oh, Micah, hey, what's going on?
What are you doing there, buddy?
Oh, nothing. I was just, I found some poetry online. I thought I might read it, you know, check it out. Because it's, you know, coming up on Valentine's Day and all. I just thought I might get in the romantic mood.
Well, that wouldn't happen to be a Valentine for anyone in particular, would it?
Oh, no. That was just, I was just, you know, brushing up on some poetry just in case, you know.
Oh, found someone. Sure, yeah. You were.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, this is MuggleCast episode 76 for February 11th, 2007. Awkward. J.K. Rowling has said that Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows is her favorite. What do you guys think about that?
Oh my gosh. OMG.
It's good enough for me. It really is.
What a concrete statement.
What did you think of Order of the Phoenix? I mean, a lot of people didn't like that book, so did she think it was her favorite? I don't remember.
What was Joe's favorite book prior to book 7?
Half-Blood Prince, I think.
Oh, was it?
It was Half-Blood Prince?
Well, when asked that question, I think even on her site, she replies, it's usually the most recent one you've written. But she did say this time around, and she said in the past that she was particularly happy when she finished writing Prisoner of Azkaban. And that's what she compared this happiness to, only she said this one was greater.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, I mean, I was going to say, after every book, wouldn't you call that book your favorite? Maybe I'm
well,
not.
Well, when I read it, I always do.
Except for book 4, because she wasn't happy with book 4.
Right.
But that was one of my most favorite, actually.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I liked book 4.
Yeah, she still did a really good job.
Yeah. Well, welcome everyone to the show. It's another week of MuggleCast, and Ben, you're finally back.
Yeah, you know, that little special episode was my idea, and I wasn't even on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sad.
Half of us were saying, no, let's not do it, and you and I guess someone else were saying, let's do it. Hey! We got a lot to discuss on today's show, including some more Deathly Hallows discussion with the release date and everything. And we got a lot of voicemails, so I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Ben Shane.
I'm Kevin Steck.
I'm Eric Skull.
And I'm Laura Thompson.
Micah Tannenbaum is standing by in the MuggleCast News Center with past week's top Harry Potter news stories. Micah.
The big news this week, Jo updated several sections of her official site. The biggest update was in her diary section, where she shared her thoughts on finishing the seventh novel. She went on to say that Deathly Hallows is her favorite book of the series, and in the rumors section, she cleared up why the announcement made last week didn't sound so happy. Lastly, Jo made two updates to her FAQ section, one addressing what the other two titles she considered for Book 7 were, and another refusing to tell us what Deathly Hallows means, as it would give away too much of the story. And although most fans were not expecting one, a lawyer for J.K. Rowling's literary agency confirmed earlier this week that Deathly Hallows would not be released in an ebook format. The previous six Potter novels were not released as ebooks either. Concerns for releasing a legal ebook include online piracy and the desire for readers to experience the books on paper. This Sunday's edition of the New York Times feature a review of MuggleNet.com's What Will Happen in Harry Potter 7. You can read the full review online now. There's also a small article on the online fandom, including a blurb about MuggleCast that will accompany the review. MuggleNet visitor Daniel recently had the opportunity to speak with Mary Grand Prix, U.S. book illustrator for his school. In the interview, Mary talks about her thoughts on Deathly Hallows. She says, "I'm anxious for this to be the last book, as much as I've enjoyed the journey. It's nice to kind of wrap it up and celebrate it as a whole, and to just kind of look back and take a deep breath and go, whew, that was quite a ride." The 2007 Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Award nominations have been announced, and the Potter series is up for the favorite book category. It is competing against How to Eat Fried Worms, Island of the Blue Dolphins, and Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. Voting will commence March 5th on Nickelodeon's website, and Justin Timberlake will be hosting this year's ceremony live on March 31st. Wrapping up book news, Half-Blood Prince has been named the most borrowed book in Scotland. To movie news, the February-March issue of The Saddle Club features a new interview with Rupert Grint, where he talks about the sixth film, The Phantom, and recent rumors concerning Emma Watson. New photos of Tom Felton, Matthew Lewis, an MSNBC preview of Order of the Phoenix with a few new shots, and more promotional pics in high resolution are now available over on MuggleNet.com. MSNBC has posted a brief interview with production designer Stuart Craig, where he reveals some interesting info about the changing sets throughout the years. He also says that work for Half-Blood Prince is already underway. Quote, "It has been impressive and beautiful and poignant, so I'm looking forward to doing that." He's also eager to start reading Deathly Hallows. Finally, The Times Online and The Observer have both released new interviews with Daniel Radcliffe. Of particular interest to book fans, The Observer website provides an interesting experience Dan had with Jo during one of her Order of the Phoenix set visit. He said, "Jo came down to the set at one point and I said, 'Oh, hello, why are you here today?' And she said, 'Oh, I just needed a break from the book. Dumbledore's giving me a lot of trouble.' And he said, 'But isn't he dead?' And Jo went on to say, 'Well, yeah, but it's more complex.' And he said briskly, 'Okay, I'm not going to ask anything else.'" That's all the news for this February 11th, 2007 edition of MuggleCast. Happy Valentine's Day. Back to the show.
All right, thank you, Micah. Okay, so Ben, we have not had a chance to get your thoughts on the release date yet.
Well,
however, I want to...
Go ahead.
What?
Go ahead.
When you found out that morning, you were very upset.
Yeah, I just didn't get it. Because... Funny enough, the day before that, I was talking with Jamie online, and we were talking about the summer, what's going on, and he told me, "I don't see very many Harry Potter events past the summer." And I was like, "Oh, so book 7 isn't a big event?" Because, you know, I figured 2008. And he said, "Well, she still could release this summer." And I told him, "I am 500% sure she will not release the book this summer." This is on January 31st. February 1st, I wake up in the morning, I get a call from Emerson. "Dude, the book's coming out July 21st. I was like, "You gotta be kidding me. There's no way." So I get on MuggleNet, I see Jamie's made the post. And yeah, then I send out an email saying this has to be some kind of joke. Because it's like your number's called early. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, geez, especially I know you and Jamie are very competitive, so I'm sure you're not going to live that one down anytime soon.
He actually hasn't rubbed it in yet. I'm surprised.
Huh.
Yeah,
so,
really.
So, Ben, were you interested? Yeah, did you want a 2008 release?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what you were kind of hoping for?
Mm-hmm. I just didn't think it
made... Are you excited, though, Ben?
It's sort of bittersweet. I mean, I think it's bittersweet for everybody because we don't want to see the series end, but at the same time, you know, I'm eager to see the story, to see what happens, and all that good stuff.
I did want to point out, though, that on episode 50, and some people have pointed this out to me, but I thought everyone had it wrong, and he was talking about Harry dying in book 6. In book 7, he's gonna eat 50 sausages. Jamie actually said on episode 50 that if the book comes out in summer 2007, he would eat 50 jumbo sausages or something. I forget the direct
quote. Oh, yeah.
I didn't listen to it, but I read the transcript just to make sure.
Wait.
And so he definitely said that. So I don't know what his plan is. He hasn't brought this up to anyone of us, so I think he's maybe hoping everyone forgot.
Also, look back in some of the shows. For those of you who were at the live show in L.A. or for the or you hear, watch the video or whatever, would someone please try to find? I guess I said that if the book comes out this summer, that I'd eat 72 inches of Subway. So I'm
That's why Jamie hasn't been on these shows. He's been hiding, hoping that everyone forgets, which is also why we made sure to announce it in the announcements.
Right. Yeah, actually, the transcript for that show still isn't uploaded for some reason. But yeah, so, you know, hopefully we'll have Jamie on next week. By the way, I know we keep promising Jamie's going to come back, and we keep getting emails about Jamie not coming back, or some people think that we fired him or got rid of him just because he's been gone away. He's been away for a few weeks, and that's not true at all.
We wish.
Jamie's
just kidding. We love Jamie.
It's not true at all. Jamie's still alive and well. He just has had some things to do. I know, you know, a lot of you guys like Jamie, but he'll be back, so don't worry about it. But moving along, Laura. Last week, we recorded the show. I brought up a theory to you about Joe wrote on the marble bust. And I don't know why we didn't come up with this on the show.
I have no
clue. But I suggested, and you supported, maybe Joe did it to make it... Joe wrote it on the marble bust to reveal the title to the world. She was hoping she didn't have to make an announcement on the site. She just wanted this to be her clever way to announce it to the world.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about that, Laura?
I thought it was a really good idea because when you think about it, why would she have done that thinking that it wouldn't leak out? I mean, seriously. So I think it would have been a very humble and yet personable way to announce the release or announce that the book was finished.
I agree.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
It also may answer why there was no big announcement on her website because she was planning on the big announcement to be from the hotel.
Well, I don't really understand that.
What would have happened to stop that, though?
But, well, yeah, here's the other thing. The Sun didn't post this report on the story until the day the book release date was announced. So I'm thinking that they somehow found out about it, and maybe they tried to clear it with Joe's lawyers or something, and they said, wait until we announce it officially. What do you guys think about all this?
Or I just think that... she wrote that on there for the heck of it, you know, just to sort of commemorate the type of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. But why wouldn't anyone notice until 3 weeks later?
Now, is this in the hotel? This is in the room, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe someone thought it was a joke.
Probably, I guess. I mean, it was written on, like, the back of it from the way it looked. Eric?
Okay, I think it's particularly significant, though, that it was the bust of Hermes, the Greek god Hermes, because I'm reading. Well, I just for fun, I went on Wicca and looked up Hermes, and it said he is the Olympian god of boundaries and of the travelers who cross them, as well as shepherds and cowherds, of orators and wit, of literature and poets. So he's like the god of literature and poets and crossing boundaries, and surely the Harry Potter series, if it's done one thing, it's broken all the records.
Yeah. There's a couple funny things here. Actually, some visitors of MuggleNet posted on the MuggleNet comments about what they think about this. And one user, Muggle at UniV, wrote that she pointed out the Hermes reference, too. She says, he was a messenger between the gods and humans, and now the messenger between JKR and us. He invented fire, and here's the most important clue. Hermes also served as a psychopomp, or an escort for the dead to help them find their way to the afterlife, the underworld in the Greek myths. And then she goes on to say, I believe some of our theories have just been proved. Moreover, he was the son of Zeus, to whom he was extremely loyal. So it's interesting, but when you think about it, I mean, you know, it was she didn't know going into this room that there was going to be a marble bust of Hermes in this room.
Why? No, hold on though. Why would she be writing in a hotel room to begin with?
Well, we sort of talked about this last week. I mean, she's written outside of her own home a lot. And some suggested that we didn't talk about this last week, actually, since it is relatively close to the cafe she started writing the books in, she wanted to write it or finish writing it in an area that was close to the cafe, and obviously she probably wouldn't have been able to go to the cafe without, you know, covering herself up and getting noticed. Oh, plus that cafe doesn't exist anymore. That too. It's now a Chinese restaurant. I mean, so unless she wanted to go and get some, you know, fortune cookies and whatever else they have there.
Well, I don't think she went into that room just because she chose this hotel because it has a marble bust of Hermes. I don't think that proves any theories. Sorry.
Well, there is a voicemail. There is a voicemail on this.
It is a coincidence. However, she might have gotten the idea to write on the marble bust because she saw that it was Hermes. I'm sure it's probably labeled or something, I would think. So she'd be like, Hermes is the messenger.
Or she's pretty
well,
smart.
She probably
here, so
recognized
she might know.
It.
Yeah, she might recognize it. I don't know.
Or recognized it, whatever. I don't know if she had a picture of him in her head. Another interesting fact, though, she was in room 652. And if you're not reading the outline of the show we have, do you guys know what is significant about the number 652?
I'm reading the pages.
And... number of pages in Half-Blood Prince. That's a little fun
fact for
you.
Is that UK or US?
US.
It's US. Yeah.
Well,
interesting.
Then...
again, probably a complete coincidence. Some people are like, ooh, 652, that must mean that that's how many pages there's going to be in the book. Well, it's not like she, you know, when she booked the room, she was like, okay, I think I'm going to have this many pages.
It's like she booked 625 through 660, just in case.
Yeah.
She can move to the right room. Yeah.
Yeah, and she knows after it's typed up how many pages it's going to be. Yeah, it all goes with typesetting and all sorts of... they won't know that for a little while yet.
Yeah.
For sure.
And, of course, Micah asked, and Joe...
delivered.
I completely screwed... yeah, Joe delivered, yes. She made a news update in her diary saying that Deathly Hallows is her favorite.
I think she answered
That's
all
good.
Of us, actually. I think she was talking directly to
Thanks,
all of us.
Micah.
I mean, she really, last week and the week before, or on the mini episode, I think we all kind of agreed that it was kind of eerily, you know, cold, or Joe's actual wording was absent in the explanation, or explanation was lacking in the date and things like this. But now she updated, what, her diary, a bunch of rumors, some trash bin things.
Yeah, well, she directly addressed why it wasn't a big announcement. She didn't say exactly why, but she said that she said any brevity in my announcement was down to the fact that I was busy editing.
Yeah. And then
she said she was very excited about the release date as well.
She took our concerns and really truly did, I think, address them, and appropriately and fittingly as well.
A visitor of MuggleNet pointed out that, now this again could be another coincidence, but it's all kind of they're fun facts about the location of the Balmoral Hotel. It's on a street called a Prince's Street. And this poster on MuggleNet, Artemis Lykos, wrote, "I'm a bit surprised that nobody has taken Prince's Street to its next logical step. That word is a pure plural, folks. We know from the sixth book that Snape may fancy himself a prince, but he isn't really one. So could this mean that we should be looking for another prince in Deathly Hallows?"
No. I agree with Ben.
Stop making all these connections, please. They're cool. They're cool, but don't think they're real, though. I mean, if something happens,
there are
it's a
only
mere
so
coincidence.
Many... right. Say Joe did manage to either plan on, you know, the bust of Hermes or the room number, or just go to the hotel because it's on Prince's Street. I think it's logical that only one and maybe both like the question is how many – not all of them could be true. Not all of them can be intended. I really don't think there's a way, you know, that Joe would have known that a statue of Hermes would be in room 652. And I didn't know that, you know, that she would say, "I need room 652 and happen to find the statue of Hermes there. And the truth is she could have just gone to the hotel because it was on Prince's Street, or she could have just gone to the hotel looking for a bust of Hermes. You don't know. I mean, it could be
or she could have went to the
hotel
or
it wasn't any of them.
Felt like going to
or it wasn't any of them. Exactly. I mean, what are the odds of a Prince's Street room 652 and a bust of Hermes? I mean, yes, the connections are brilliant, but I really, really want to stress that JKR is, or at least I think so, human. And incapable of that much.
I don't know. These could be. Sorry, Ben, but I do think maybe the marble bust could be a little hint or a little suggestion of what to expect. Just because
you're wrong.
Maybe she got the idea from seeing the marble bust. Okay, well, yeah, coming from the guy who was 500% sure that the books that was coming out 2007.
Shut up.
I'm gonna be using that one for a while, by the way. But
dude. You go back to the previous shows. There was one show before that where I said the book would be released June of 2007. So I was pretty darn close. Actually, there's another one where I said July 15th, and then you made fun of me. You're like, 2 days after the movie? And then, yeah, look at it. Look after the movie. In your face, Andrew.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, man. So there you go. Some little food for thought there. And I still stand by my publicity stunt theory. Maybe not a publicity stunt, but a unique way of announcing that the book is finished. Something just went awry, clearly.
Yeah, I think that's a definite possibility.
We have a few announcements now. We want to remind everyone that Ben, Micah, Jamie, and I will be at Enlightening 2007 at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, from July 12th to July 15th. We're going to be doing a live podcast there, and also we're going to be doing a special workshop on how to create your own podcast. We'll be talking to everyone about how we create MuggleCasts on a week-to-week basis, which, trust me, is not easy, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So we encourage everyone to go to enlightening2007.org. It's a family – it's a unique Harry Potter conference because it's designed for families. Adults can go and bring their kids, and there's going to be different areas of the conference for kids
and what
adults
dates are those
and
again?
Mixing. July 12th to the 15th. And we want to remind everyone to dig us on dig.com/podcast and to also vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley. Once again, we're doing well on Podcast Alley, so we thank everyone who's been voting for us at both websites. And you can find links to vote for us at mugglecast.com. And Ben, we haven't done that for this in a while. Mugglenet.com's, is there a new title now? I think I saw.
No, well, it's called the unofficial Deathly Hallows analysis.
Not just that, but it's not who lives, who dies, who falls in love, and how the adventure will finally end. Didn't they change it?
No.
On the Borders thing, it had a different title, but okay. So Ben, there's going to be a big article in the New York Times this week. Sunday.
Yeah, this Sunday there's a book review for us. It's awesome. Go out and buy the book, please. It's great. New York Times agrees with us, I think. Hopefully they should. But also, I did an interview with the New York Times earlier this week. It's going to be on their podcast, which I'm searching right now to see if it's on there or not. So yeah, I'm on the New York Times podcast this week. The New York Times book review podcast, excuse me. There is it's about a 5 to 10 minute interview or so. I talk about what MuggleNet is and things like that. So you go check me out on the New York Times. Yeah, cool stuff.
All right, so that's that. We have a rebuttal to get to now. This is about Dudley having his magical abilities. We talked about this a little bit last week, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit more because I started rereading Half-Blood Prince the other day, and a few people pointed out in an interview what Joe had to say about Dudley, and is there more to Dudley than what meets the eye? And she replied, no, what you see is what you get. I'm happy to say that he's definitely a character without much backstory. He's just Dudley. The next book, Half-Blood Prince, is the least that you see of the Dursleys. You see them quite briefly. You see them a bit more in the final book, but you don't get a lot of Dudley in book 6. Very few lines. I am sorry if there are Dudley fans out there, but I think you need to look at your priorities if it is Dudley that you are looking forward to. And then she laughs about it. So from this, what I gather, and tell me what you guys think, basically what she's saying there is Dursleys don't play a big role in book 7, and that really means that there really couldn't be more to Dudley.
Yeah. Well, I don't really know that we won't learn something more about the Dursleys, because we're supposed to, at least about Petunia, but I think that pretty much confirms that what we see is what we get with Dudley, that he's just kind of a stupid bully. That's pretty much it.
And I do want to say, I'm sure there were rebuttals and things, but when JKR updated her facts, I noticed that she also had already pre-answered that Petunia will not show magical ability at all in the series. She actually did deny that.
Mm-hmm.
So
she did.
I neglected to see or hear about that until last episode. So yeah, that's fixed now. I will no longer speculate.
Yeah. And Laura, I believe it was you. Well, I want to talk about a little bit more. Laura, I believe it was you last week. You pointed out a quote in beginning of Half-Blood Prince when Dumbledore is visiting with the Dursleys.
Right.
We didn't have the exact quote, but I was rereading it, and it still strikes
it's still
me
weird,
as
isn't it?
Hinting that. Yeah, let me read it. Dumbledore says, "The best that can be said is that he, Harry, has at least escaped the appalling damage you have inflicted upon the unfortunate boy sitting between you." Both Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon looked around instinctively as though expecting to see someone other than Dudley squeezed between them. "Us mistreat daughters? What did you—" began Uncle Vernon furiously, but Dumbledore raising his finger for silence, a silence which fell as though he had struck Uncle Vernon dumb.
I think that the damage that was done to Dudley, is that what you're getting ready?
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with the way they've spoiled him and the way they've sheltered him. I mean, I don't know if there's any... I mean, there could be something deeper than that, but at face value, that's what it looks like. That the fact that they've
That was very well said, Ben.
I think what's interesting is that Dumbledore says that he has at least escaped the appalling damage. Meaning he got... Because they wouldn't... Harry, he got out of... the Dursleys trying to hide that he was a wizard. Whereas if he didn't escape, he wouldn't have been spoiled.
Yeah, but also refer to the fact that they were terrible to him, but they spoiled Dudley. And so
it's sort of like that. The way I think it is that the way they're talking about Harry is that through Harry's hardships and being treated like crap, basically, he's learned that life isn't easy and that you have to persevere in order to succeed. And he doesn't take anything for granted, when Dudley, on the other hand, takes a lot for granted. But, you know, he could be magical. I don't know.
True. Although I think what Joe does say, not seeing much of the Dursleys, pretty much all but gives away that we're not going to be seeing something big like that going on. But like you said, Laura, still a big revelation about Aunt Petunia.
Yeah, we haven't really heard anything about her, so there's got to be something.
It's strange. And then also, Brandon 15 of Fresno wrote in about Dudley. He says, "In the latest episode, it is debated if Dudley's worst fear is if he is a wizard or a squib, or if he has done magic, but this cannot be possible because only wizards and squibs can see Dementors, and Dudley could not see them in an alleyway."
Is that necessarily true, though?
Yeah, I don't think it was ever specifically...
said that
Dudley,
you have to be a wizard.
Because
maybe you have to believe they exist.
That he couldn't see them?
Or something.
No, I think so, because when they were in court...
Maybe you have to acknowledge the magical world. Maybe that's what it is. Because squibs can't do magic, but they can still see him. So they're useful as a muggle. Oh, wait. Squibs can't see him.
Yeah, they can.
They can't. No, they can't. What's her name? Miss Fig couldn't see him.
I thought she said she could.
No, I thought she was freaking out.
Or maybe she was lying.
No, don't you remember? She was freaking out because she said, "I know what they are." Wasn't she?
Yeah, but it seems like when they were in court, Fudge was being kind of disparaging towards squibs, and he said, "Can squibs even see Dementors?" And she got very flustered, and she was like, "Yeah, we can." So I don't know if
she was
making it up.
She was lying
to cover Perry's case.
But I'm saying, right after the incident happened... Right after the incident
I'm looking at the lexicon. It says that they can't see Dementors.
Okay. Cleared up.
Okay, but yeah, unless J.K.R. cleared it up, I think the book actually leaves it open for us to think, because it doesn't necessarily say that Fig couldn't see the Dementors, but we get the impression
I think it's clarified, and I think she makes it clear in the opening chapter, or opening two chapters of Order of the Phoenix, that they can't, because Arabella Fig... I think Harry asks her. I mean, Andrew, do you have a copy of the book near you?
Well, no, that's the confusing thing. When she was asked to describe them, she couldn't. You know, she did rather poorly in the courtroom of describing the Dementors. But she told Fudge, the Wiz and Gamo, that squibs could see them, and maybe they could, but maybe it's a case of the fact that Fig didn't. Maybe she was just too far down the street to see Dementors, but normally squibs...
No, but she didn't know how they move. She couldn't describe how they move, though. That was the thing. She couldn't describe their motions when they move. No, she incorrectly described it. He said, "I saw a Dementor running," or something like that.
Oh, and Dementors glide.
But didn't she, whenever the whole thing was over, didn't she come running up and say, "Come on, get up before they come back," or something? Like, how would she have known what was going on if she couldn't see?
Well, because if they were gone, if it, Harry right. wouldn't be just sitting there, you know, and she wouldn't feel their strain that they put on your body or whatever.
Yeah.
Back to the original question. But, I mean, this also raises the question, it's hard to think that Dudley would pretend to not be able to see them, but it was never specifically stated anyway that he couldn't see
yeah,
them, right?
No.
He was just saying, what's that?
He was feeling something, right? But he didn't know what it was coming from or where it was coming
well,
from.
Well, yeah. No, he obviously just felt something. I think that they can't see him.
He felt like he would never be happy again.
Yeah. Okay, well, guess that answers that. We have a rebuttal now from Courtney15 of England. She writes, "Hi, MuggleCast. I was listening to episode 75, and you were discussing a passage from chapter 1 of Goblet of Fire. You read out the passage and quoted Wormtail as saying, 'If we proceeded, if I murder,' end quote. I looked back at this passage, and Wormtail actually says, quote unquote, 'if I curse.' Just thought I'd mention it, as this gives a whole new meaning to your discussion, as Wormtail is most likely talking about putting the Imperius curse on Crouch Sr. Love the show. You guys are great, Courtney." I don't know how we got the wrong quote in there.
It almost seems like it did say
anyone
murder.
Have books near him?
Just from remembering reading the book.
I don't either.
Maybe I'm wrong, but...
Okay, so we looked into this, and the English... The U.S. version is murder, but since she lives in England, it says, "if I curse," apparently.
No, but...
So, that's...
Maybe it's...
I mean, does curse mean
the
murder?
The type of curse they're implying.
No.
England?
I don't
maybe
think
prior
so.
To that, they implied the killing curse, and therefore they didn't have to say...
Yeah, that's true.
What kind of Harry Potter fans are we? We don't even own the UK versions.
I do.
I know.
Well, I could go get it. Do you want me to?
Yeah, I own the UK version, but I don't think it's with me.
Okay, well, there's a little interesting tidbit for everyone. Not sure what that means, but interesting stuff that these translations can give away. All right, now, as everyone might remember, a few weeks ago, we started our Deathly Hallows theory contest, where we asked everyone to send in your Deathly Hallows theories.
Andrew, it's Hallows.
What?
Yeah. Not Hallows.
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 Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Ben.
Hallows. Hallows. Deathly Hallows.
You've been calling it Hallows. Since
because I like calling it Hollows.
Well, yeah.
Can I change
not even,
it?
Not
can
even...
I get everyone to start Deathly Hallows?
Yeah. There's...
So it's Hallows. Deathly Hallows. That's confusing. So here they are now, our favorite Deathly Hallows theory contest winner dingers.
Hey, MuggleCast, it's Karen from Marymount, Ohio, and I have a Deathly Hallows theory. On page 604 of the U.S. hardcover edition of Half-Blood Prince, Snape says to Harry, "You dare use my own spells against me, Potter? It was I who invented them. I, the Half-Blood Prince. And you turn my inventions on me, like your filthy father?" This could mean that James used Snape's old potions book to hurt him. It could hint that he almost killed Snape more than once. I think we will probably learn more about this in Book 7. I absolutely adore the show, and Jamie, you're my favorite. Bye!
Hello, MuggleCast. I'm CC13 from Massachusetts, and I have an answer to your book, Deathly Hallows Theory Contest, that you announced in Episode 73. My theory is that I was looking online, and I found that Hallows is most of the time associated with All Hallows Eve, more commonly known as Halloween. On this time, and the theory, of course, originated in Scotland, Britain, Ireland, which is where Hogwarts is, it's that time that magic is at its worst and most potent and magical. That makes me think that maybe Voldemort had some special spell or something or that he needs to complete only on that day. Maybe he's going to make his last Horcrux on that day. I was just wondering what you thought. It also makes sense that maybe on Halloween, that would be when the final battle was.
Hey, MuggleCast. This is Sam Matea from California, and I'm just calling in about the contest, you know. My thoughts on the ending of Book 7, will be that it will come down to Harry and Snape and Malfoy. And Voldemort, having let all of his followers out of Azkaban, will try and take over Hogwarts. He'll succeed, probably killing some people in his path, but he will succeed. And then it will come down to a matchup between Malfoy and his father. Now, I know it's slightly unlikely, but I have a feeling that he has a lot of hatred for his father. Then, it'll come down to Snape, Harry, and Voldemort. Snape will, eventually, go over to Voldemort, pretend he's on his side, disable Voldemort's wand, Harry will then use it. That will cancel out the Prefatory Incantatum effect, or the other wand, as you were saying on the show. And Harry will be able to defeat him, and after that, I don't know what will happen. The rest of the Order will be fighting off the other people as it goes along. That's my thoughts. Thanks for listening. If you want to email me, thank you.
Hey, guys. I'm calling in for the Deathly Hallows theory thing. My theory is a familiar one, but I have a different take on it. My theory is that the Hallows are, like, the souls that Voldemort has killed. And I think of it because of the foreign translations of the title, where instead of Hallows, they use Saints. And I think of it as All Saints Day, All Souls Day. I think that these people will somehow help Harry on his quest, maybe guide him to special places or tell him something about a weakness of Voldemort's or whatever. And I don't think that, like, people will come back to life, but I do think that somehow they will get a hold of him. And, yeah. So, love the show. Keep up the great work. Bye-bye.
Hey, MuggleCast. This is Samay from Minnesota calling in with the Deathly Hallows theory. I think that Deathly Hallows may be referring to an old church in London called All Hallows by the Tower. I think so because when Harry and Dumbledore are leaving Slughorn's, they stop at an old church to apparate. That's page 75 of the hardcover U.S. edition of Half-Blood Prince. I think that this is one of J.K.R.'s foreshadows or hints. All Hallows by the Tower could be either the resting place of one of the Horcruxes or the site of another significant event. Okay, that's all. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, MuggleCast. I have a couple of theories for Deathly Hallows. Hallows means to respect, so maybe somebody respecting a certain person or thing could die. Like, for example, Bellatrix. She respects Voldemort a lot, and she might die, like, have a big death scene in Deathly Hallows because of this respect and the loyalty that comes with it. I have another theory, too. There's, this is kind of obvious, but Deathly Hallows could be referring to Voldemort himself because part of his soul is still in his body, and the soul might be the holy object, and he is obviously deathly. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hey, MuggleCast. I'm Jason from Georgia, and I'm calling to tell you my view on Deathly Hallows. The prefix hallow in science means salt, and I know that witches are prevented from performing magic if there is a ring of salt around them. Salt can also be harmful to witches as well. This could fit because the title of Book 7 has the prefix hallow in hollows, or hallows, obviously, and salt can be deadly to witches. It is just a theory, take it for what it's worth. Laura Mallard is definitely staying on the state of Georgia. Pickles Rock, thanks, Jason.
Hi, this is Crystal, 13, from Arlington Heights, Illinois. My theory on the Deathly Hallows is that it's a kind of cleansing or purification process. I think that's because the definition of hallow is to sanctify or consecrate. Right now, Harry is too filled with hate and anger, and we know that he needs love to defeat Voldemort. Pure, unadulterated love, like the kind that saved him when he was a year old. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Hey, MuggleCast, this is Jeff from Iowa. This is my theory in response to the contest mentioned in episode 73. I was recently watching Disney's Hocus Pocus, and there was a line in there that witches cannot set foot on hallowed ground. This got me thinking about how the Deathly Hallows could be a place of hallowed ground, so I did some research. Hallowed ground refers to holy ground, generally a place where there has been death or burial grounds. The most common example of hallowed ground in American history is the stretch of battlefield from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania to Charlottesville, Virginia from the American Civil War. If a battlefield where so much blood was shed is hallowed ground, is it not plausible that there's somewhere in the wizarding world where there was a great battle? Perhaps the battlefield of the First War with Grindelwald? If there is such a place, I think Voldemort would be drawn to this place and perhaps conceal a Horcrux. I tend to lean more towards the place where the final battle between Harry and Voldemort will become known as the Deathly Hallows. I would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Miranda Marshall from Roseville, Michigan. This is my theory on Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. I've researched many literary references to Hallows, and I found something that might be useful. In the Lord of the Rings trilogy, there is a fictional building called the House of the Kings. The House of the Kings was located in Hallows on the fifth level of the Minas Tirithis. This was the burial place for the kings of Gondor. Cemeteries are also said to be on hallowed grounds. This may be the reason for the name in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. According to dictionary.com, one of the definitions of hallows is to respect or honor greatly, revere. Perhaps the hallows are the burial sites of the four founders. Would they not be considered the kings and queens of Hogwarts? They perhaps, in the wizarding world, are the most respected and honored. This may give us some insight on the Horcruxes also. If Voldemort was looking for items of their personal nature, also why Goblet was taking place, I heard that J.K. Rowling made a comment about the placement of the graveyard to director Mike Newell, saying that that one is not on Hogwarts grounds. Is it just me, or does it sound like there's more than one? There, however, is a quote that I received secondhand. I remember my friend telling it to me a few weeks ago, and it supported my theory. I'm still looking for evidence that it actually exists. Thanks.
Hey, MuggleCasters. I'm Church 16 from Pennsylvania. I was just calling about the Deathly Hallows theory contest. As I was studying for my English midterm, I had to make flashcards for my vocab words. As I was mindlessly copying them out, I came across a word that stopped me in my tracks. It read, consecrate, to set apart for a specific purpose, to make holy, hollow. What really interested me was this first part of the definition, to set apart for a specific purpose. I did a little research, and it turns out that the Israelites first coined this word holy. However, it didn't always mean sacred. It meant to separate from the ordinary. At that moment, everything became limpid, an adjective meaning to clear or transparent. Is it at all possible that the Deathly Hallows refers to Harry, hallowed, or, as the prophecy says, marked? Hope you guys are as ardent about this theory as I am. Ardent being an adjective meaning very enthusiastic or impassionated. Well, it just goes to show, maybe a little vocab isn't that bad after all. Love you guys.
Hi, this is Cynthia, and I'm from Kentucky, and I have been hearing some theories going around about Harry, that Harry was actually the one who was at Godric's Hollow on that Halloween night in 1981. After thinking about it, this makes perfect sense to me, because when you see the Sorcerer's Stone movie, it looks like that scene is being witnessed by an onlooker. Yet, in all of the books, they are written in or from Harry's point of view, and this scene just does not seem to be in Harry's point of view. But, after thinking about this theory, I think truly it was, or has been written from his point of view, because the present-day Harry used a time-turner to return to that night and actually warned his parents that Voldy was coming. Remember, James said, he's coming, like he was not at all surprised that Voldemort was coming. So then, James told Harry to get under the invisibility cloak, and Harry then witnessed his mother being murdered. This was the hardest thing Harry's ever done, but he knew he couldn't change his mother's murder because it would change his whole future. After the murders, I think there was some kind of struggle with future Harry and possibly some Death Eaters. And that is why the Potter's house was destroyed. After all, we've never seen the Avada Kedavra destroy a whole house. After that, I think that Harry went to the Dumbledore of the past and told him what needed to be done with baby Harry and what had happened at the house. And told him what was going to happen in the future as well. And also, he, at that time, gave Dumbledore the cloak so Dumbledore could give it to the future Harry in the future at his first year at Hogwarts. Anyway, that's kind of the way I think it's going to happen. So, thank you very much. Bye.
Hi, MuggleCast. This is Jessica. I'm 16. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. And I'm calling with my own Deathly Hallows theory. So when developing my theory, I was particularly interested in studying the meanings of the two words deathly and hallows. Deathly is something that has the appearance of death, and hallows, which has no dictionary definition as is, I used hallow, which as a verb form is to make or set apart as holy. In my opinion, this has to refer to horcruxes. Splitting one's soul resembles death, and Voldemort's Horcruxes are the most sacred thing to him ever. However, I don't believe the meaning of this title stops here. The word Hallows was used as it was for a reason, and this was to refer to the Four Hallows of Tuatha De Danann, which I found while researching the Four Hallows of Arthurian legend. I believe these to be the key to the identity of the four founders' Horcruxes. The first artifact is the Pole of Combat, which is Ravenclaw's wand. The second, the Cauldron of Cure, Hufflepuff's cup. The third, the Stone of Destiny, which is the stone in Slytherin's ring. Finally, we have the Sword of Light. However, I don't think Gryffindor's sword is a Horcrux. I think Gryffindor had a shield that went with that sword, and that's where Voldemort put his Horcrux. Lastly, I'd like to add that your discussion about the Hangman led me to one final conclusion. The Hangman refers to Harry. However, I'm not entirely sure he's going to die. I think his sacrifice may ultimately be the act of killing Voldemort, in which case his soul will be torn in two. For some, this act means nothing, but to Harry, it will mean a lot more. So, thanks for listening. I love the show, especially Jamie. Bye.
Hello, everyone. My name is Amy, and this is my submission for the one-minute theory. The more I research, the more I believe that Deathly Hallows refers to the Horcruxes themselves. And yes, I'm basing this on Arthurian legend. I know, big shocker, right? Well, there's more to it than that. We can't deny that the Harry Potter series has been laced with King Arthur influences. Chamber of Secrets screams Excalibur. I would like to point out another Arthurian connection that interests me. Taliesin was advisor and chief harper of King Arthur. But more than that, he became obsessed with becoming immortal. He believed that the Hallows of Logris were the keys to immortality. When researching Taliesin, I came across several literary works in which Taliesin is a main character. The Dark is Rising is a five-book series by Susan Cooper published throughout the 60s and 70s. The books follow a young boy named Will who discovers on his 11th birthday that he is destined to seek the signs before the final battle with the Lord of the Dark. In these books, the signs are a set of six circles quartered by crosses. The six signs are each made of a different material and represent a different element. In the presence of these, the dark is powerless. I know this theory isn't exactly answering all of the burning questions the fandom has, and I know the whole King Arthur theory isn't exactly original, but I do believe this puts a different spin on it. Let me know what y'all think.
All right, so there you go. Congrats to everyone who had their theory just aired. And don't forget, we want everyone to go to MuggleCast.com and vote for their favorite theory. And we'll give everyone, let's say, 2 weeks to vote. No, 1 week to vote. And then we'll announce the winners on episode 77. Yeah. All right, Laura, we got some more voicemails this week. Goody.
Okay, wait, Andrew, before you get to the voicemails, I am going to go. I have
Eric.
Yeah, I know. I was invited to go water skiing, actually, so that will...
I'm glad to know water skiing takes priority over MuggleCast. That's good.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm just blending in, doing the Kiwi thing, so it's one of those...
No, really, it's fine. No, go ahead. No, don't
okay,
please.
Okay,
don't worry
cool.
about it.
I'm Eric Skull. Cheers. Bye.
Let's get started.
Hey, MuggleCast. This is Melanie from North Carolina. And my question is, do you think that now that Torx is getting together with Lupin, do you think that Umbridge would try to sabotage their relationship? Just something to think about. You know, later. Bye.
No.
I don't think so. Why, Ben?
Why would she care? I mean, what's...
Well, I think the point she's trying to make is that Tonks is an Auror and Lupin is a werewolf. And she's passed all sorts of laws against werewolves, codes and such, that make it hard for him to get a job. And I think what Melanie's trying to say is that Umbridge might feel that Tonks might share privileged information with him, and he might in turn betray them because he's a werewolf. But
I don't think so. I think Lupin's done enough to align himself with the Order that really wouldn't matter.
I doubt
Umbridge would care.
I don't think they have the power to restrict that kind of stuff.
Yeah. See, I think my thing is now, I don't even think it has anything to do with the Order. I think it's just that the Ministry has been so discredited in the last book that no one's going to give...
That's true, yeah.
I have to think of a polite way to say this. No one's going to care what they have to say, essentially.
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, in war, oftentimes the law of the land goes out the window.
Even though this is a love relationship.
Hi, Mogulcast. This is Jess from Florida. In Joe's recent diary entry, she said, "We will still have much to speculate after book 7. And I know in the past she has contradicted herself by saying that she's going to tie up all loose ends. I was wondering if she was just trying to make us feel better with our separation anxiety, or if she is really leaving things open. Thanks, I love your show, and I'm sorry, I'm a little sick, so pardon my snuffles. Okay, bye."
I don't know how that's making everyone feel better.
Yeah,
I don't think she'd lie.
To be able to... Yeah, no, she's definitely not lying. I mean, let's face it, you can't close everything.
No, I think
it's impossible.
I think the point is she's going to close up all of the huge,
pivotal, like, points that she
all
wants
of,
to
yeah, get. All of the important stuff. I think that the kind of stuff that she's talking about is still being able to speculate about will be more inconsequential things.
Well, I still think it'd be cool if she left one, maybe not huge thing, but one thing open that could get a wide amount of speculation. Not so much a cliffhanger, but just something she knows what the fans like doing. They love, obviously, speculating. So just leave a couple things open that aren't so small, but, you know, could be discussed for a while. I don't know what exactly.
Yeah, but... Again, this is the woman who said that she wants to tie it up so that nobody else can ever come back and write a sequel when she's dead 100 years from now, or...
But you still can. You can write prequels. And...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that... I think she wants to wrap
prequels
up all
the sequels.
Big stuff.
Yeah. No, I think the big stuff will be, but... I think, you know, what's her exact quote?
I have no clue.
She says, "We'll still have much to speculate about," so I don't see Joe leaving just the little things. I think there might be one or two interesting topics to discuss still.
I think that's going to be the fact, just because it's impossible to touch every piece of information that she laid out there. You know,
she kept going back
and trying to tie up these loose ends that
it just
completely
wouldn't
don't flow with the story. Exactly. It's going to make for a crappy book.
Hi, Mugglecasters. This is Dana, 14, from Iowa. I was calling in regards to the Deathly Hallows titles. I was looking in my dictionary, and I noticed that Hallows had two entries, one meaning to revere or to make holy, but the other one basically saying that it's an alternate spelling for hallow, H-A-L-L-O. So I looked that up in my dictionary, and I found that it is basically a cry used in hunting, or a shout, or an exultation. And I got to thinking, deathly cry, and I thought that this might pertain to the voices that Harry and Luna can hear inside or beyond the veil. I was wondering what you think about this. Thanks. Love the show.
I don't know. The first thing I think of when I think of deathly cry is Lily. Like, whenever Harry hears her screaming... Whenever he's near the Dementors.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it's a good guess.
I mean, it's possible, but we're still speculating. I mean, she said herself that she's not going to tell us what the meaning of Hallows is because...
Or give too much away.
Yeah.
Well, imagine if she told us who the Half-Blood Prince was.
Right.
You'd be like, what?
Yeah,
I don't
think
it'd be more confusing than anything. Yeah.
But, I mean, what could a deathly cry do? I mean, pretty much everything we've talked about on the show... makes sense, but I don't see what a cry could do.
That's how Harry's gonna kill Voldemort.
He's just gonna let out a battle cry.
Yeah.
Voldemort.
His head is gonna explode or something like that.
I just hope that Deathly Hallows is...
Hallows.
That's what I said!
You said Hallows.
You did say Hallows.
Hallows.
There you go.
Hallows. Right?
Yes.
Hallows. I definitely said whatever. I just hope the deathly...
New Jersey people, you can't say anything right.
I'm just hoping the Deathly Hallows... Get it right?
Yeah. There you go.
I'm just going to record a sound clip of it and just edit it in every time. We'll have a more important significance than... Half-Blood Prince, because that just seemed like sort of a letdown, and we were misguided from the beginning when Joe on our website, she posted that quote, "He looks like a scraggly old lion or whatever she said. But she was talking about Scrimgeour.
Why did you feel misled by that?
Because people everyone assumed it was the Half-Blood Prince.
Well, yeah. That's... I don't know. Well, I didn't what I'm think saying it is was. Half-Blood that Prince would have been too easy.
But Half-Blood Prince was... It helped... The book helped Harry, but it wasn't the main focus. I don't know. It just didn't seem right.
Yeah, but remember we said that it could come into play later. And that's why...
The book?
No, the Half-Blood Prince.
Oh. Yeah, that is true, because Joe says it's basically a two-part series.
Right.
Or we've said, but yeah, so, okay.
Raina from Ohio says, when I was rereading Chamber of Secrets in the Heir of Slytherin chapter, I noticed something sort of cool. As Harry is wanting help, he keeps wishing for something to save him. He then pulls the Sword of Gryffindor out of the sorting hat. If items of the Four Founders are the remaining Horcruxes, is it possible that they're inside the sorting hat?
I doubt it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I think the reason I doubt this is because when asked if the sorting hat was a Horcrux on her site, Jo said that Horcruxes do not make shows of themselves singing in front of crowded rooms of people. And I think that would kind of apply to having Horcruxes hidden inside of it, too.
Not to mention access to the sorting hat.
Yeah.
You have to remember
to
that.
Mention. It's a lot of stuff to fit in a hat.
And wasn't Dumbledore headmaster at the time when Tom Riddle went off and started creating the Horcruxes?
Yes.
So it's not likely that Tom Riddle snuck into...
And the diary didn't come out of the...
Yep, that's true.
Right.
Neither did the ring.
That,
and the ring didn't come out of the sorting hat. The locket didn't come out of the sorting hat. So.
I think, again, that would be too easy if you had them all hidden in one place. Definitely.
Okay, well, I think that... concludes this week's short voicemail segment. We'll have some more in the near future, but we want to remind everyone that if you have a voicemail to call in, just dial 1-218-20-MAGIC in the United States, and we'll give you the other numbers in a few. That pretty much does it for this week's episode of MuggleCast. I think it's a shorter show than some that we've had recently, but last week's was an hour and a half, so we're all talked out. But of course, we'll be back next week with more. We're happy to say that Mikey is probably going to become more of a regular on the show.
Well, actually, that was in direct response to the Facebook petition to make Mikey...
Yes, the Facebook...
The Facebook petition that we all got and drove us over the edge. Or actually, maybe we realized ourselves that Mikey's a decent host. And
yeah. Even though you've never hosted with him yet. But yeah, he's a good host, and a lot of people like him. So yeah, I'm sure he'll be on more often. But actually, let's spend a minute here talking about the show. I just wanted to say that we like getting everyone's feedback about the show. So if you have anything to say, if you have a complaint, something you don't like, but you've never voiced your opinion about it, feel free to email us, mugglecast@staff.mugglenet.com. It'll get to all of us. And we want to make the show as the best it can be. And, you know, if you guys have a problem with it and you're not telling us, and, you know, we're just going to keep doing it. So if you hate how I'm always, you know, hey, welcome to MuggleCast, then tell me and I'll be all mellow and boring. But, or if you don't like Wizard Rock, or if you don't like Ben, or you don't like Laura, or Kevin. Well, I mean, nobody likes Kevin. He's still on here. But just kidding. Kevin, I'm sorry. I'm completely kidding.
Side note, do you ever get emails from people like who directly email you telling you that they hate you?
I have actually.
No. Yeah. I haven't gotten
many, but you do get a couple from time to time.
Yeah.
I think they go along the same lines as I hate your guts, get off the show, I don't want to hear you again. Yeah.
I got a MySpace thing from this girl, a message, and it was like all caps, and it was like, you ruined MuggleCast, and she was like, I'm never listening again until you get off the show.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They're just jealous.
I mean, I was holding out until Laura was off too, but I decided to come back this week. I'm just kidding.
Okay, now,
Laura,
so you're kidding. Okay.
Yep. I was enjoying the 3 weeks Ben was gone.
And if you have good feedback, give us some good feedback. Or if you have a suggestion of, like, a main discussion to talk about on the show, let us know. You know what we like to talk about here, as if you've been listening for a while. So, anything. Give us any feedback. Again, we continue to get emails saying, don't go after Book 7. We're not going to go after Book 7. We're going to go after Book 7, but it won't be in the immediate vicinity of Book 7, I guess you could say.
1 week.
So, 1 week. Yeah, give it a couple of weeks. No, seriously, we'll be around for a while after Book 7, so don't worry about that. We're all going to be, I will admit, we all will be in college, or most of us will. Kevin, you'll still be in college, right? What are you
yep.
right now?
I'm currently a senior in credits, but I have a
first
five
semester
year,
senior, right?
Yeah, I have a 5-year course plan, so I'll be here.
Oh, okay.
For one.
So yeah, besides Micah, we're all going to be in college. So admittedly,
actually,
Micah's
going
harder.
Back.
Is he?
Yeah, you didn't hear about that?
No. Oh, okay, well then we're all
we're
screwed
all
up.
Be in college.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. He's not going back.
Oh,
I spit
okay.
Out.
He never went to begin with, so now he's going. Admittedly, it will be harder. It might be harder to schedule the shows. I mean, on one hand, we might have more free time. On the other hand, we might be involved in extracurricular activities. So who knows? But we'll keep doing it for as long as possible. So with that said, Ben, what's the P.O. Box if people want to send us some parcel mail?
P.O. Box 223, Mound Ridge, Kansas, 67107.
For voicemail questions, as I mentioned earlier, you can dial 1-218-20-MAGIC if you're in the United States. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. If you're in Australia, you can dial 02-8003-5668. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast to leave us a message directly. Just remember, whether it's by phone or Skype, keep your message under 30 seconds and try to eliminate as much background noise as possible. You can also go to MuggleCast.com for a handy feedback form where you can contact any of us or use our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. And don't forget all of our community outlets, MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, we got Frapper, Last.fm, Fantasy Forums, of course, Dig Podcast Alley, and Yahoo Podcasts. So I think that just about does it for this week's show. Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Ben Shane.
I'm Kevin Steck.
And I'm Laura Thompson.
We'll see everyone next week for episode 70. Oh my god, guys, 2 sevens, 77.
Oh,
that must mean something.
Yep.
We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.